Welcome to the Intercut Podcast Channel, the weekly place to get the latest on movie, TV, and entertainment that people can't cut away from. I am your co-host, Zachary Shevich, and joining me, he's still standing in line for Peso Pluma, it's Arturo Zurita.
But I'm nice and brisketed out and seeing what those concert tickets are after the fact. Ooh. Hell no, Zach, bro. I came back. I was looking at the Sueños tickets over here. I got to see everybody in that Sueños lineup for a whopping $3.99. So I am excited for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a year where somehow South By, we always say, has different things going on. And movies was like my third go-to. I had barbecue and music before I had movies this year. But
exactly.
It's just the way the cookie crumbles this year.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that you can enjoy out of South by Southwest Film Festival, and It's beyond the films, so we did a lot of those this year, and also taking advantage of all South by has to offer, our queen of karaoke, Amanda. Ooh, the Jedi. How was it performing for Ryan Gosling and company? Was it more nerve-wracking, or were you ready for the challenge?
It was a bigger stunt than what they did, bro.
It was, you know? I was ready for the occasion. There was a moment I kind of look over, and Daniel Kwan is singing the Backstreet Boys back at me.
Ooh.
And I was surreal. Going. It was very surreal.
You'll
very
have it
weird.
That
it's
way.
Like, it's the key to karaoke is like being at least being able to say someone on key and picking a song that people are going to enjoy. I think people make the mistake. They're like, I can sing this song so well, but it's like the worst song you could ever pick for karaoke. It doesn't matter if you sound good. No
it's
one wants
that. American
that.
Idol. Yeah.
Yeah. We want the hype. Get something hype. So, you know,
get
I was happy with my selection. So I did that.
Future's
and then
Dirty
later
Sprite.
On, I did Mr. Brightside because you can't lose. You can't lose
you can't
with
lose
the Backstreet Boys and Mr. Brightside, you know?
You definitely want somebody that something that the people in the crowd will also know the words to.
Yeah, you want people to be in it. You want people to be like reflecting your energy back at you.
Exactly.
So it was fun, you know. You put on a little theatrics. You jump around a little bit. You give a couple hip thrusts. You're good to go.
Yeah, we had a really fun South by Southwest. I think we'll talk more about some of the fun that we had in our South by Southwest extended recap.
A lot of collectibles and stuff for sure.
But this is our top 10 of South by Southwest, the top 10 movies that we saw as part of the Film and TV Festival this year. It is a really exciting film festival. As we've mentioned in the past, this is the place that debuted Everything Everywhere All at Once. It debuts a lot of fun movies. I think Bodies, Bodies, Bodies was one that came out here. Last year, we had a really fun South by Southwest seeing movies like Bottoms, seeing movies like Problemista, seeing movies movies like Blackberry and Upon Entry and Self-Reliance and I Used to Be Funny, which still isn't out. Please come out soon. But yeah, Down Low, which we can't forget because we are the Down Low defenders. We told
we
Lucas
are.
Gage that. Amanda told Lucas Gage
I
that.
I did in person and he was so thankful. He took a picture with me, which I will send. And in the video, if you want to put it on screen.
Boom.
Go
yeah,
for
we'll
it.
Do it.
There you go.
There's usually a lot to really enjoy at South by Southwest. This felt like a kind of strange year in terms of the movie offerings at South by. You know, I think we had some concern going into Sundance, coming off of the dual actors and writers strikes, about whether or not enough movies were getting made to make a full, interesting festival. And Sundance being something that's a little more focused on indie film festivals, a little bit more of the like A24 neon influence, and those are companies that got waivers to make their movies. I don't think the quality really wavered at Sundance, but I think we started to feel a little bit of the strike here at South by Southwest. I don't know if you guys agree with me, at least on that point.
I definitely do. It's kind of, I felt that Sundance was a little weak. There's still a lot of strong ones, but I do still feel like compared to last year, I'm going based on like last year, movies that were at Sundance and South by last year made it all the way into my top 10 at the end of the year. And they're movies that I still like watching regularly. There is definitely not as many of those, I don't think, coming out of this. And a lot of the best stuff from Sundance also was at South by Southwest. Yeah. So at least I feel like last year there were a couple holdovers. So like Talk to Me was at South by after it was at Sundance again. And that was great. But this time it's like so many. If we hadn't already seen them at another festival, there's movies from Sundance that would be trumping most of the, unique content that at least we caught, because that's another issue, is that for whatever reason this year at South By it was like impossible to get into certain movies, or like really hard
that's
to.
That's my factor. Yeah, I think I am a little bit more positive on the Sundance lineup. There was a lot of movies that I enjoyed from there, A Real Pain and stuff that played here, like you were mentioning, to go through them. I know you're gonna mention one that we rewatched, but Didi is one that I want to see towards the end of the year. I think we'll be there. Black Box Diaries is a documentary. I think it was a good place to showcase Sasquatch Sunset and Ghostlight. All of these being festival favorites. While I did like the Sundance lineup a lot more, South By was a little bit weaker, but I think more than that, they still had these really big movies that I think are making the top for you guys.
Yeah.
There was still some good indies. We wanted bigger showcases, like last year when they had beef mobiles walking around, you know, maybe the activations felt a little bit bigger, maybe the indie movies, there was more that we were able to get into. And I think it's what Amanda said, that issue of how the fest played out, it was easier for me to get into live performances
than it I had was a better time movies. Getting into after parties than I did getting to see Magpie I think would be on this list.
He had the ability to go see Ryan Gosling's butt, but he couldn't see him.
I got into the Fall Guy after party. I didn't get into Fall Guy. I don't know how that happens, but
crazy stuff.
Because he was like, giving out condolences. I can't get into the movie. Here's party tickets.
But even hearing in other Q&As that directors, like one of my favorite movies that's going to make the top 10, the director of that film said he was waiting at Fall Guy. They didn't get in, but he made friends along the way. And it's like, wow, okay, so you really are still in this place where everyone's a film lover. You know, if you're willing to wait hours for a movie, it's because you freaking want to be in that building. You really love the craft of it. So I still think that was there. If that's not there, that's when I consider it a bad year. It's just not the strongest year.
I just think for me, the only reason why is that last year, I feel like we got into so many things. It was really easy to knock a lot of stuff out with our express passes. This year, I'm begging people. I'm like literally in the emails, desperately begging for tickets like day before because I couldn't, my express pass just wouldn't work. And like, thankfully, somehow that worked out.
We're to blame. See, last year we didn't put it in the South By to-do list, but the more we kept doing it, that's more
now
people around there
now
clicking with us.
Which is good. Good for them.
That's what we do. I'm sorry we're not gatekeepers. We just love y'all too much.
Yeah, and you know what? It worked out for me. It was way more difficult. And that's what I mean. The small stuff is where I tried to get Magpie first, and it was gone.
So we encountered this frustrating situation where we were having trouble getting the express passes, which meant we were staying on longer lines and not getting into some stuff. And as a result of staying on those longer lines, not having those guarantees, we're also missing out on some of the smaller movies. Like, I really would have liked to have seen Dandelion at the festival, but it conflicted with me trying to stay in line for, I think it was Civil War. We tried to see Magpie, and that just filled up instantly. We talked about in our South by Southwest preview that, like, you could have a pretty solid fest just going to screenings at the Paramount and the Stateside. We kind of did that unintentionally. You know, and normally we try to bounce around a little bit more. Just for whatever reason, it didn't really – didn't feel that feasible at this year's South by Southwest. And as a result, I think we missed a lot of the like potentially smaller movies that usually fill out our lists. You mentioned Magpie. That's one that got really strong reviews out of the festival that none of us had a chance to catch. Like,
and they ain't answering us.
But it's also that, like, as a result, we're mostly going after those like big movies that are occupying the big theaters, and those are the films that are coming from the studios. And in that case, then that is maybe where we do feel some of that like strike fatigue or whatever, that they don't have like quite as many options to choose from to fill those big theaters. So we get stuff that's like good, not great. And
blame
that's
the strike for them not promoting it. They're the ones dealing with the strike. So why were you coming in more stingy this festival?
I'm sorry. We were in lines, but they can get us a
ticket to be in there if you don't want to give us a digital thing. So it's also like this thing where we have to deal with the front of like, we didn't get to cover them. But they make our jobs more difficult.
Yeah. But it's to say that, like, as you were saying, the vibes still great at South By.
Always.
Sunshine and barbecue makes for a good time. A bunch of cool people, a bunch of inner cuties who said hi. We talked about greatest hits earlier. That was like the inner cutie gathering. I think I said hi to four different people who listened to the podcast
You had another Zach there as well.
A lot of people had idea of you too. I don't know if that was just because it was the last movie of the festival and everyone was all like, this is our last chance to say hi. But like, there was a lot of people that as I was waiting for you guys to get out, they were like filtering by me and saying hi and stuff. And I was like, cool. Hell yeah.
So shout out to Sam, Zach, Beth, Will, Vic, Toria or Veronica, was it? That we met at the festival. A bunch of people. Thanks for saying hi. But yeah, I mean, you know, even though the movies maybe that weren't as consistently great as we hoped for, it was still a lot of really good stuff. A lot of stuff that I think is worthwhile and worth recommending, and stuff that we want to keep mentioning. So we do have a top 10 here. And it maybe is a little thinner than some of our previous top 10s, but still plenty of movies that you should keep on your radar and check out once you have a chance to.
Did you want to mention any stragglers?
Oh, any movies that we didn't catch, you mean? Or
not honorable mentions, yeah, just didn't catch, to let people know, like, we know about this.
Magpie.
It's just...
Magpie's got to be the top of the list, right? What other stragglers do you have?
Oddity was that horror film that we were like, where?
Family.
Family was another
Bird Eater.
Right,
with a lot of the Midnighters, we ended up not having a chance to catch.
Again, because they're putting them in a theater way far out there. If we could, yeah, we would have snatched
them. And like, I tried. Those were all things I tried for the Express Pass for, but then, you know, it's like, okay, I can go line up 3 hours early, but then I'm missing this thing that I do have a guaranteed seat to. Oh, exactly. Omniloop. I know you caught it, but we missed Omniloop. We just could not get in on that line. Because I don't know why they were so insistent on putting it in like a small theater. I'm like, girl just won like multiple awards. And there was nothing else in the Paramount at that time. Like,
nothing.
Swap.
The MoviePass documentary. I missed out on that one and was actually getting pretty good reviews as well. Yeah, so there's a good slew. And then some of the stuff that we missed, the other people in the group caught it. So I think we'll be getting to it.
Yeah, hopefully you'll mention every movie that you're curious about. And if you didn't, it's because we thought it sucked. all right, so let's kick things off.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With our number 10s, Arturo, I don't know if you want to get things going. What is your 10th favorite movie of South by Southwest 2024?
So I got an interesting top 10 here. I've got some shorts involved in the mix, but my first one is one that I think is very indicative of this year's South By, especially for the people who attended by not attending. My Dead Friend Zoe. It was a movie that had a lot of built-up stuff around it, especially because it was getting its premiere at the Paramount. It's done by a military vet who he himself retired to a degree, I guess got dishonorably discharged. Because he's still technically like on this mission from his squad to make movies.
Interesting story about how I think it was his commanding officer saw he was doing a bunch of filming while he was still in the army and basically like ordered him to drop out to go to film school and make films. So pretty inspirational story behind this movie that I think is also trying to inspire other elements as well. What did you like about My Dead Friend Zoe?
I like the buildup of the story for her going into therapy and this idea of what therapy really meant for a lot of movies that this year saw, because I think a majority of the films that I have on here have that kind of as the through line. When do you reassess your life and where you're at when you're stuck in a period of time? Again, a lot of the looping movies, as we discussed, kind of had that. But this is one where it didn't need that loop. It just showcased somebody who, after making it out of the military, is not necessarily haunted, but is always accompanied by this vision of her dead friend, Zoe, someone who she was supposed to be there for after the military. And, you know, they split apart and different things had happened. And they kind of keep this thing with you on, like, what happened to the relationship when she was over there? How is she going to overcome this? But like a lot of other movies that were at the festival, it kind of showcased that you can't depend on other people. Soldiers depend on soldiers, you know, inmates depend on inmates. And it's this idea that the reason you go through what you go through is because on the other side, you're going to be the help for somebody else. And I thought that was very poignant in the movie. It does carry the one little baggage that I think a couple of these other movies do, where they are obviously addressing an issue while working with the people who caused that damn issue. And it can get a little iffy because it's like, what are you supposed to do, right? Are you not supposed to showcase this to other vets through an avenue that involves the people who are kind of dismissing these other vets? I don't want it to be a Band-Aid where they could just use this movie, this piece of art, as an excuse to look, watch this movie and be better. You have to implement those programs. And I think the movie does a good job at calling it out, But at the same time, there's only so far a movie can go when it's still a command, like Zach's saying, from his officer to go make it. But I still thought it was a beautiful way to express it through art. I thought the lead performances, because it's technically a duo lead, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. But it's Sonequa Martin-Green who kills it. There's a specific sequence towards the end after she's had a lot of back and forth with her grandpa, who she's taken care of, played incredibly by Ed Harris.
Ed Harris.
That she has this really good breakthrough scene, and I thought that was fantastic. It's also a pretty funny movie, so don't go into it thinking it's going to be very dreary. Natalie Morales plays her friend, and she's done this, like, oh, my dead friend is still with me type of thing. And she carries a really good sense of humor. Yeah. Would crush, right? He's also in the movie, and he does a really good job at playing, like, the funny love interest while she's still going through a lot of her PTSD. So overall, I thought it had a really good balance, and... hey, if you almost get a tear out of me by the Q&A, I think that it's worthy of a mention. My dead friend Zoe.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm pretty much on the same. Like, everything Art said, I agree with 100%. Like, that moment at the end, like, it doesn't even spoil anything by just saying, the words, but Zoe wouldn't, is, like, that hits so hard when that was said. Mm-hmm. And that's such a very cool thing. It is interesting. It's always interesting to watch a lot of, like, American military stuff when, like, as a Canadian, and just how people kind of respond to things. And then my brain being like, okay, but, like, then why aren't you guys doing anything for them? Like, I know you're, what do you mean? What are we doing here?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. People stood up. What does that mean? Like,
and that is, like, sort of what the movie is trying to get at, but it does sort of, like, it is maddening in its own way. And I had this in my honorable mentions because, like you said, I think it is pretty effective, and it does it in a movie that is, you know, entertaining too. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good jokes in it, but ultimately the emotionality of it, like, I think while most of the movie sort of skates in, like, around the melodramatic territory, I think the way they resolve it is really, really effective.
It's
they do a little
good.
Bit of a.
It's pretty
they,
good.
They kind
it's
of
good.
They kind of mislead you a little bit in a way that I thought was very effective.
Yeah.
Because usually that could tick you off.
Yeah. Right. And
I'm
like,
oh, this better come in.
It makes a lot of sense, particularly given the context of these characters, what they've been through, and the message of the movie, which I think is really effective. So, I'm hoping this is one that will resonate with people, even if I. Some of it is a mixed bag. I think ultimately, like you said, the performances are incredible, with
really
Ed Harris lending a lot of pathos, Natalie Morales lending a lot of laughs, and Sonequa Martin-Green kind of tying it all together.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. Really, really strong. Really strong movie.
I got a Ted Lasso thing going on where I'm just going to tap the board whenever it needs to be said. But this is one of those movies where if you're not going to therapy, go watch this one. And it really does. It's a show. I don't want him to use it as an excuse, but if you did end up watching this movie as a vet, I think it's it's a very encouraging movie for a lot of the BS that they have to go through.
Yeah, for sure.
Amanda, what do you have at number 10?
My number 10, I think I'm going to go with Bob Trevino Likes It. That's where I think I'm going to stick that one. Really, this one got the most cries out of me, the Barbie Ferreira. This was absolutely a very weird little festival of the Euphoria girlies. And this is the strongest one. The other two were horrors.
Oh, they're going to say we're horrorable.
No, horrors. And this, I feel like this is the strongest one. This one definitely does feel like a streaming movie. I don't think you'd get anything from having this in theater or get anything out of it. It was really good, though. Like, I'm not trying to say that as, like, a downplay, but it's just, like, sometimes there's movies that, like, they'd be great if they were in theaters, but you don't need it to be.
I agree.
So this is going to be, so this is going to, wherever this lands, it's going to do well, I think. It's a very interesting little story where Barbie's character accidentally befriends someone on Facebook who has the same name as her narcissistic father, exceedingly narcissistic, like, emotionally abusive father.
Right.
And, you know, the dude just starts liking all of her Facebook posts, and they kind of build this unconventional, unlikely friendship, and it never gets into the weird, like, oh my God, someone's going to get a crush on the other one. It really does just end up feeling like this nice little companionship between two people. It absolutely hits the emotions on multiple levels. You realize that both sides are kind of dealing with these emotional fall-throughs or familial issues, and they kind of end up there with each other for support, which I really liked. Really strong performances out of Barbie, and I always forget the other guy's name, but he's in a bunch of stuff.
John Leguizamo.
John Leguizamo.
Yeah.
The
That's
boy.
The one reason I wanted to go see it.
And he was really good. He was really nice. He's got this like very like just like tender, friendly, non-threatening quality to him, which is great. It's the exact person you needed in this kind of role to pull it off.
Bruno.
Because yeah, he's it's so good. So I really liked it. It hit my tear. I cried a lot. So yeah, no, it was really nice.
Knowing Dee Dee and a lot of the other social media movies, how do you think it played up with their approach to it?
I could tell that this was supposed to be taking place a little bit further back in time, and they clearly just didn't have a way to make Facebook look like it used to. So there's moments where we were kind of like, when is this taking place? Because it's still like, I'm going to eat toast, hashtag toast eating or something like that.
It's
so.
Very like first 5 years of Facebook in terms of like the status updates and whatever.
But then Facebook was like the current era.
Right, which makes sense given that it's apparently based on a true story. But
it is. Yeah. That's what hit me even harder. It's like it hits you and then that happens. You're like, I have to engage with this in reality.
Yeah, I was honestly making myself sick with how often I was saying, aw, at this movie. Like it is really, really sweet. And I could see some people being like sugar comaed by how sweet it is, but like I found it to be really delightful and just like that dynamic between John Leguizamo and Barbie Ferreira, I think it's really, really good. It is kind of like broadly written in terms of the characterizations and the jokes. You know, it's not like somebody having a small cry, but like they burst into tears, right? But I did find it very effective and really charming, and I think it's destined to be one of those movies that like you put on kind of like sure whatever on VOD and end up falling in love with it because it's unexpected in terms of how it hits you. Yeah, I liked it quite a bit. I mean, there's a reason that it won both the, I think it was the Grand Jury Prize and the Audience Award for the narrative feature competition here at South By. All right, so. Number 10 on Amanda's list, Bob Trevino likes it. My number 10, I'm going to go with a film that neither of you were able to catch. It is called The Gutter. And it is probably the most that I laughed at a movie at South By this year. It is a really ridiculous and ridiculously stupid film directed by Yasir and Isaiah Lester brothers about a guy who... who starts working at a bowling alley and then decides to become a pro bowler in order to save the bowling alley. But really, that's just like the threadbare plot that they use to insert a bunch of bits and a bunch of sketches and a bunch of really ridiculous jokes. I think the average scene in this movie is about 30 seconds long because it's really just like set up, punchline, let's get you really to the funny. Next thing. It's really, that's really funny. And like, I think the programmer Peter Hall introduced this and said like, if you're not laughing in the first 10 minutes, like you probably won't get on this movie's level. But if you are, you're in for a good time. Like, I think it'll be pretty evident once you see a little bit of it, whether or not this is for you. But I laughed my ass off at this one. Shameik Moore plays the main guy, Walt. Susan Sarandon is in this movie. Darcy Carden is fucking hilarious in this movie. Jack A. Harris, Paul Reiser. Like, there's actually kind of a stacked cast in this film. I don't know, man. It's just ridiculous, raunchy, ridiculous. I think it's like kind of in the mode of the Scary Movies style of humor, but less parody and more just absurd. I feel like we would have had a really fun time having some beers at this one. So I'm a little bit disappointed we didn't get to watch it together.
Well, but when the scheduled time we were supposed to see it was like 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Like 10 a.m. But like
the first morning screening, which is not the right time for a movie like that.
Yeah. I don't know what it was. I just feel like they did a bad job because I just remember scheduling I'm looking at it things. And I'm like, I have no interest in this movie. I have no interest in this. Yeah, and then it's fun, I don't know.
The Gutter is kind of a weird title, like, even in watching it, like, I think, you know, what they're trying to do is make a pun off of, like, how base and vulgar a lot of the humor is with the gutter in bowling, but, you know, it's not, like, the most grabby title, or the plot description also isn't necessarily the best encapsulation of what is really fun about this movie, but it is a lot of fun. So I got The Gutter, number 10 on my list of best films from South by Southwest.
Hell yeah.
You called it the down low of this year.
Well, you said it might be.
I mean, it's the closest I got to seeing something like Down Low, which just like I was like shaking my head laughing because I feel like I shouldn't be laughing at some of the jokes they're making, but they're hysterical. So that's what I have in common between both of them, although Down Low has that bit of like emotionality.
More the emotional side, but
yeah, this one didn't really get to.
I've seen you quote some of the lines, and it's one of those where I look at the letterbox and I have to leave because I'm like, oh, this is one of those where they confuse reviews for just the quotes that they really enjoyed in the movie for the first time, yeah. And now they're just like posting them there. But yeah. When I had searched up the Lester guy,
mm-hmm.
him working with they're working for Marvel, but specifically they're working for the Marvel show that's got
Don Cheadle.
What's his name? And oh, I've yeah. told you, Don Cheadle is secretly funny the guy. Funniest dude in yeah. Hollywood. Then I see that Jared Hess is a producer on this. The guys who mm-hmm. just did Napoleon Dynamite, you know, and the short for the Oscars. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, we should have seen this.
Yeah. Actually, Napoleon Dynamite might be the perfect comp for this. Although it is significantly blacker movie than Napoleon Dynamite, obviously.
Okay, I probably but, liked it anyway.
Like maybe if Napoleon Dynamite was like direct.
I haven't tried watching it since high school, and I didn't like it in high school. So I have to give it a go.
All right.
I didn't we'll like any it. Of that kind of comedy. Like, it's why I don't no, like okay. Will Ferrell. It's just
I
like.
I will bring. Oh, that's right. You hate Will Ferrell. I will bring my Will Ferrell movies, and I will bring my Napoleon Dynamite.
Some, I like the other guys. I like the other guys go. A lot, actually. That was decent.
I will bring that and a copy of The Gutter for the next festival.
Sick.
So, yeah, Gutter at my number 10. Let's go to Art's number 9.
At number 9, I have a movie that I think may come up in at least one of y'all's list. It is Babes, coming out May 17th. It is the directorial debut, feature debut, if I'm not mistaken, of Pamela Adlon. She has obviously been in a lot of TV stuff from the Louis C.K. show. She had her own series on FX as well. She's freaking Bobby. Came out with the socks and everything from King of the Hill. I always think she's really funny, and seeing her directorial debut was interesting because you can tell it is a collaborative project with the two stars that you have in here, specifically Alana Glazer. If you're an Alana Glazer fan from the Broad City days, hey, it's time for you to come back because she is going all out. She's not doing the stand-up stuff she's been doing. I supported her there, even though I didn't like it. I supported that horror movie she did, even though I didn't like it. This is her telling the story she wants to tell to the best of her ability. There are moments where she just goes off, and you could tell it's just the ad-lib hour with her. She's got a writing credit in this as well, but it's perfectly balanced with Michelle Buteau, who is not, like Zach had said in our full review, the Abby to her Alana. But almost like an Alana.
The Alana to her Alana?
Something like that, yeah. But she's still a little bit more of the grounded one because she's the one who already has a family. And it's really Alana's character finally getting pregnant in a very interesting way with the way she gets pregnant. And trying to wonder, should she have this child? Does she have it in her? And the rift that causes to the friendship. I thought it was a blast to catch it. And I'm looking forward to see how they roll it out in theaters.
Yeah, I mean, I think with this one, I ended up putting Babes all the way at number 3 on my list. I had a pretty good time with it.
And I told you in the preview, I said, don't belittle her. It's going to smack, bro.
I was a little skeptical going in because of the things that you mentioned that I Alana Glazer just hasn't really hit for me leaving Broad City. And I find her very, very funny. So I'm glad to sort of that she found a project that suits her talents. And it's a really funny. We mentioned this in the review that we did on our channel, but she's got this quality where she will like remain energetic and optimistic in the face of like really uncomfortable situations that just is really ripe for comedy given the whole like disaster of going through pregnancy. I feel weird saying that as a guy, but I think people understand. I don't know. I really enjoyed this one. I think it's sort of somewhere between the humor she had in Broad City and sort of the vulgarity of something like Bridesmaids.
Yes.
It's a pretty good time.
Uses the vulgarity to say good things about pregnancy, things that aren't usually commented on, the awkwardness, the silliness of it. And it was pretty, it's a really good baby movie.
Yeah. Really strong.
I liked what I saw of it. I did have to leave to go get a ticket for a different movie.
But that says a lot because you're not usually into like
the pregnancy
movies
stories
where you're going to hear, babies crying the entire time. And you get a little bit of that in here.
A little bit of that. Yeah. But it was pretty good. I feel like you guys said it did get funnier because for what I saw, I was like, the jokes were really funny, but it always felt like they were like one step away from being like the most effective version of the joke they could be.
Yeah.
And apparently it gets stronger later. So that's awesome. I'm excited to finish it off.
Although I wouldn't say it's like a classic comedy or a classic comedy. Like, it's a really good time. Not necessarily the absolute funniest thing that you'll see, but solid, enjoyable. I, again, had it number 3.
Ratio.
It was number 9 on Arturo's top 10 of South by Southwest. Babes. Didn't realize it's coming out so soon, but around Mother's Day makes sense.
I was surprised
sense.
Too. Yeah, yeah. Man. That's a good time for it. Mother's Day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shout out to that good team. One. Very smart.
It's a good one.
All right, let's get to Amanda's number 9.
I'm going to go with Desert Road. This was one of the last ones I managed to catch on a screener link.
That's my number 7. Let's go.
There you go. It might have been higher. My list is kind of like weird, but I really, we can like wait until it hits your 7, but I did really enjoy this one. It's kind of one of those midnight loop movies that we were talking about, and I just love a good premise where it's like this girl on the side of the road just ends up on this weird loop that every time she tries to get away from something, she just ends up back at her car, which I thought was really, really interesting concept, and they executed it really well. This was one a lot of people were really excited about, too. When I was at Alamo waiting to get into a movie, like the whole huge line of people that were there were trying to get into Desert Road, and they had 2 back-to-back screenings of it. So hopefully people got to catch it because it was very unique, interesting, and dare I say fun, even though that's a weird, but yeah, no, I like
no, but
it.
It's fun because it's that like low key sci-fi energy, right? Like it's sort of, it's got that scrappy quality. Like I hate to keep bringing up Benson and Moorhead, but they feel like the best sort of point of comparison, the way that they approach these very out there sci-fi stories, but on a very like ground level, personal feeling where there's like not a big cast and not a lot of locations, but they're still able to kind of give you this mind-bending experience, and Desert Road really accomplishes that. I had it in my honorable mentions. Art, you said you had it at 7.
Yeah, from Kristen
Froseth.
Incredible performance, because again, we've had so many loop movies, and I think this one was centered in on exactly what it needed to be. It's very simple in its production design because it's literally out in the desert. But I think the ensemble that they use for what she's going through and the way that she also, like we were saying, for other movies, her actually inspecting the sci-fi of it and figuring out and creating a map of like, where do I go? That's why this one cleared my top for it. And again, I want to mention other things without spoiling it. But like the moment it starts clicking with you, you're like, oh, this is really good. Like this is one of those where it works really good as a movie. But damn, the story is so solid. If you get a good production, you could make this into a play. You could make this into different things. And I thought it was really well told. And definitely made it into my top. She has been someone who I know has been on the rise for a while. Zach really liked her in How to Blow Up a Pipeline. Really good ensemble there. And I'm looking forward to the bigger movies that she gets on the horizon because she proved herself with this one.
Definitely. A really clever sci-fi film. Definitely keep Desert Road on your radar. Art's number 7. Amanda's number 9. My number 9 is Civil War, which is going to get mentioned again, I'm sure. So we can go back to Art for your number 8.
I got an acting duo here. We got a lot of screeners for the global category. I don't know how much of the global category y'all got to see.
Not enough.
But they were actually the nicest ones. The only category that was like, here you go, brought to you by movies. Yeah. So here's some links. Yeah. And there was 2 that was getting a lot of buzz for the performances. So I checked them out. I think they're the best performances, isn't it? They are crazy. Oh, yeah. I'm going to start with the first one that I think may have gotten the award. Malta, which is an Argentinian-Colombian co-production of this woman who's just kind of just trying to make it by. The closest thing I can – she's kind of like in Passages, if you remember our boy's character who was just like – just trying to make it through life, was not necessarily giving the best back to society or their family, but they're just coasting through. And I thought her performance and the approach to it was really solid. But the even better performance was from Bionicle's Bachata. I don't know if this ended up winning an audience award. I was like, I got to check it out. Bro, I don't know if this is a documentary. I don't know how much of this is real, but it is played as a mockumentary of the film team capturing this dude who's a drug dealer and drug addict who's trying to clean up for his girlfriend, who's an even probably bigger drug addict than he is. It felt like they were documenting somebody. The closest I can think of is Holy Motors, and that's fantastical. This isn't, and it's still like that crazy. Everybody just knows that he's always turnt in this neighborhood. They know they're going to kick him out of the bar, but they'll keep him in there for a little bit. And the whole documentary crew, the way that they get involved in it and how they observe him, look, I'm not going to say this is everyone's cup of tea, but a staggering performance from the lead here. So my duo here's are going to be for some of the best acting performances in Bionicle's Bachata and Malta, 2 that come out of the global category that was – it tends to be a pretty underrated category, especially because they don't get that big of a release coming out of it. I mean, last year, Chronicles of a Wandering Saint was one I freaking loved. still not out there. So hopefully these end up coming out in some limited capacity. You usually end up seeing these get some love at like a Gotham Awards or something.
But yeah.
Pretty solid and maybe, performances.
And you mentioned that movie is the sponsor of the global category. Maybe these will end up as movie releases, right? Something like that.
They should.
I don't know.
We'll see.
Yeah, Bianco's Bachata was one of the ones that I put in our preview. I'm glad to see that it hit for you. Yeah,
it's the crazy. Global category. Dude, just so you know. I don't know what drugs he doesn't do in the movie. I'll put it that way.
Hell yeah. It's reminding me of that one crazy movie we saw at Fantasia Fest a few years ago that I can't remember.
With the guy who doesn't have a home. Yes. It was like with an F. Jeez. Fred Frank something. He gets possessed by aliens, right?
Yes.
And he just like,
yes.
they ride his body around town.
Bro, is that it's a good like comp that. Or is okay,
yes,
cool.
That is like, dude, it's that movie, but no alien ever went into
Awesome. All right, good to know. We got Bianco's Bachata and Malta at number 8 on Arturo's top 10 of South by Southwest. Amanda, what's near number 8?
I feel like we're going to talk about it more later on, so we can save it for that. But Monkey Man is my number 8.
Ooh.
We'll talk about that more in a bit. My number 8, I have to go back to my list because I was trying to find the name of that movie. my number 8 is Dead Male. I don't know if either of you have this on your list.
Hey, solid pick.
Yeah, that's kind of an honorable. I really did like that one. That should have been on the list.
That's not like a real indie movie at South By, right?
Yeah. That's what it feels like. That feels like this is never going to be in a theater, and that's totally okay.
Yeah. A really cool movie. One of those movies where, like, you know it's low budget because because people's faces don't look like typical movie faces, if that makes any sense. Like, they're casting a wider net in terms of who they're putting in this film. But a
Fried
really
Barry. It just came to me. Fried Barry.
Fried Barry, thank you. That is the crazy movie that we were talking about earlier.
Keep going with Dead Male. Great.
Dead Male. Really interesting film that, like, almost feel, you know, you're talking about sci-fi and time loops. It almost feels like that, but it's really just, it's just the way that they structure this plot that kind of jumps back in time, about like this mysterious letter that gets received at a facility for lost mail, and then the investigation to find out where it came from. Like, it's a really roundabout way of getting into the plot, but it's so like unique and so like interestingly different. Like, you kind of it's the rhythms of the movie are not your typical rhythms, and that could be something that, like, in lesser hands makes a film unwatchable. Here I was just sort of engrossed. Like, I had no idea what the story was gonna be, where they're gonna go, but it ends up this being this really, really interesting, almost noir style investigation movie. I thought it was really incredible. Just something that, like, riveted me because I could not predict what would happen next. And that's sometimes the things that you really seek out at these festivals, are the films that just are unexpected, are challenging your idea of how to tell a story.
Yeah.
Not that this is, like, even the most experimental movie, just that it's different.
It's different and weird. And
weird.
Yeah, but then whilst being like such a mundane thing, it's so interesting in every way.
It's the mixture of it being very ordinary and very unsettling. I don't know. It just sort of really worked for me. So shout out to the team behind this one, co-directed by Kyle McConaughey and Joe DeBoer, who did a really excellent job with it. Hope some people get a chance to check this one out. Yeah, it's shot really cool.
It's so
very
grungy. It feels grimy. Like another thing that they found, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It feels like another, like, aspect to the story of this dude who they show you his whole techniques of, like, what he has to do to reverse engineer what he needs to find. Just him deciding whether it's a prank or not is really fascinating. But it's the visuals of it, the sound of it. I think they did a really good job at capturing, like, a lost artifact.
I was going to say, that's what I was literally going to say. It almost
like you're
feels
also
like
a person.
It almost feels like them. And it also just kind of almost feels like the movie came out, like, a long time ago. And then someone was just like, we found this movie. Let's all watch it. You know, it's got that kind of like gritty, I don't
found
know, like
art
just
quality
that,
to
found
it.
Art quality. Yeah, very, very interesting movie.
Felt wrong sometimes.
It felt wrong.
Like, yes.
Really,
you feel like you shouldn't be watching it.
Yeah.
It felt like a snuff film at points. I was like,
yes. When you're locked in on this one fucking weirdo, you're
like,
I don't like this.
That's a compliment.
I don't like this, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, any film that kind of can crawl under your skin in that way is doing something interesting. So yeah,
for sure.
I definitely recommend people check out Dead Male.
Yeah.
My number 8. So ours number 7 is Desert Road. So let's go back to Amanda for her number 7.
I think I'm going to go with I Wish You All the Best. This was one of the other ones I was excited for, you know, a little YA kind of, you know, drama, coming of age story based on a book by an author who I found out actually liked my work. And I think their work is good, too.
Nice.
So it was exciting to make it in. This is one of those ones that I did have to wait outside Alamo for like a decent chunk of time to get into. But I did. So that was nice. I do think that maybe so the movie is directed by Tommy, who has now transitioned, but was Ryan in 13 Reasons Why. And this book came out around the time that they were transitioning. Mm-hmm. And so I think she goes by she, they, but she just decided like, this is a very important, this means so much to me during this time in my life that I really want to be the person who's adapting it. So I thought that was really cool. And it must mean so much to the author that someone who's had such a personal journey with that piece of work was also the person to bring it to screen. So I do think it has some issues. So it's basically just a teen non-binary person gets kicked out of their home, and it's kind of everything falling out from there, getting the support network from their sister, played by Alexandra Daddario, and her husband, played by Cole Sprouse.
That's what got me.
And honestly, he's good.
Okay, he goes in Zach was talking about what actress?
Yeah.
Being a mom now?
Anne Hathaway. Alexander Daddario. Yeah. So it's like sibling. So they literally make jokes about it. They're
Have Zach and Cody be having kids at this point in time.
Yeah. So they're like, he's like constantly like, yeah, it's, you know, I'm your brother dad. And he's so good and wholesome in the role. It's really, really good nice. The only issue I would say I have with it is that maybe some of the pacing feels a little bit awkward. I feel like sometimes emotions jump really quick, and I get the teenagers do that. But I just feel like every once in a while things would escalate too quickly at a point in time. And then I do feel like there was like intimacy added in a moment where I didn't necessarily think it needed to be, because then it pulls back off of it immediately the next day. So, and it is a little bit different from the book. So I don't expect like a 1-to-1 ratio to the book. So there are a lot of things I really liked about it. I do think that maybe it just has like a couple issues. I do think that the people who need it or who are kind of like into that story in general are really gonna vibe with it and enjoy it. I do think it was really good overall. A lot of really great strong performances that are nice, and that it was just kind of nice for the, I guess, the relationship aspect of it didn't even need to be like, a lot of the times when you're telling queer stories, if there's a relationship aspect, that becomes one of the huge dramas of like, are they gay? I have to get through my queerness too. That there's nothing in question here. It's, you know, everybody's very comfortable with who they are and what they're into. And it's just kind of the other outside aspect of the story that is causing the friction. But you don't even have to be super focused on that, because they are in the loving home of someone who is just trying to understand and support them. So it was really nice. I liked it quite a bit.
In terms of tone, is this a little bit more like a Love, Simon kind of movie, or is this maybe a little bit more like The Half of It, where it's got more of the like dramatic comedy feel to it? Like,
yeah,
how
I would say probably in between those. It does just have the very standard like YA feel, like the YA coming of age feel. It's funny. Tommy does take a shot at Love, Simon in the Q&A, being like,
I was gonna say Love, Simon is.
Yeah, none of this fucking manipulate you into coming out bullshit. Like, everybody just gets to do what they need to on their own time.
Isn't that interesting, though? Like, Love, Simon was the progression, and now they got to destroy Love, Simon for this to be the progression.
Yeah, and I don't think you do.
In 5 years' time, that will be destroyed for the next one. It's like
exactly.
a coming out of your shell type thing.
Yeah, and I don't think you do need to destroy any of the stuff that came before it. And I think they all have their value. And their strength. But it is just nice that this is a story about like, yes, bad things happen, but somebody was able to kind of come out on their own terms, whether somebody decided they wanted to accept them or not. So I did really like that. But yeah, the tone is very, it's just very, very YA, very, very cool. YA coming of age. Maybe not as, no, I don't know. Yeah, just kind of like in that realm. Like, it just doesn't stand out in any given direction. I feel like it does like the drama well, it does the comedy well, it does the supportive characters well, but it's not like outrageously funny to the point that it leans more that way, and it's not so dramatic that it leans really far that way. So yeah,
Nice. I wish you all the best. Amanda's number 7 out of South by Southwest. My number 7 from the festival, I'm going with the documentary Secret Mall Apartment.
Hey.
This is a pretty interesting film about a group of artists in Rhode Island who decide to build an apartment inside of the new mall in their town. And, you know, it feels like this very small premise that, like, how is this a whole documentary? But I think ultimately what they are doing with this film in exploring these artists' life and some of the other projects they've worked on is asking the question about, like, what is art? And, like, can civil disobedience or just sort of, like, things that we don't consider to be art in its own way? Like, can you, like, live artistically in certain aspects without making it sound very academic or very eggheady? They just sort of sneak it into this fun film that almost feels like an extended prank in some ways. But I think it's a very thoughtful and thoughtfully made look at this, like, group in a group of artists at a specific time when they were able to coexist together and create this art together, and the different projects that they dedicated themselves to. And also, while also sort of asking interesting questions about, like, who is allowed to occupy certain spaces and what happens when you push out the places that one time accommodated people who aren't necessarily making enough money to, you know, live in fancy areas and are perhaps pursuing crafts that are not always the most financially rewarding. I just thought there was a lot of really interesting questions raised, and also just a lot of cool footage. Like, the amount of footage they took of assembling this secret apartment inside of a mall is ridiculous. Like, that they had the foresight to document all of this is pretty crazy.
The space, like, how they saved it. But yeah, I love how he said the camera was still working, that it fit in his palm.
Yeah.
I was like, ah, that's clean. Because I agree with you. The archives, crazy. Especially the footage of them reconstructing how the mall was built and what gave them the idea to do it. I was like, this is a really good doc. I have it at number 5, bro. I agree with you.
Okay, cool. Hell
yeah. Yeah. So I have it up there also. It's like you were saying, it's almost like by accident they went back and went, oh my gosh, are we like activists? Like, they were just chilling at a mall, like, just building walls, doing stuff.
Yeah.
And it's everything they learned about what they did throughout that period in reverse. I also just think that documentaries on malls have been very fascinating because it used to be this epicenter for America, and now, like, they're all dying. I think a Jasper Mall might be another one that was a really good showcase of a mall in Minnesota and how it was dying. There's this. There's even a lot of movies from Stranger Things going back to the mall too. There was something, like Wonder Woman was using it as a throwback. Mm. Just the setting of a mall is a flashback. So I like you, thought it was a fascinating documentary through its archives, what they learned after, and just very well told.
A really good documentary, but it raises a lot of great questions.
Really good.
So yeah, I really enjoyed this one.
We need to start documenting everything. We have GoPros. If we could do it in the 90s, we could do it now.
There we go. All right. We're going to vlog from all the festivals we go to.
Honestly,
now,
I don't know why we don't just all strap Insta360s to our chests at these festivals. Like, I don't know why.
Look forward to it at TIFF 2024. Hey. So like my number 7, Secret Mall Apartment. That was also Arturo's number 5. Let's go back to Arturo for his number 6.
Hey, for the number 6, we have to remember that there's so many really cool stuff out there at South By. We kind of did a little VR stuff. I know Zach was very much looking forward to this Vortex Cinema that kind of puts you into this theater where you walk around and it's all VR. Alina had done this Tadpole thing. The XR is cool because we just know it's a matter of time before these movies that we're watching in a theater, we're just going to be strapped in. Because there's still features. There's still narratives just being told in a different medium. We also had a lot of shorts, which is where I'm dedicating this section to. From Can to Sound and Color, Christmas Every Day, My Tomato Heart. A lot of really good stuff. I got links that are still up, and hopefully you guys are able to catch them. But there's two that I need to highlight right here because these two I thought were better than some of the feature films. Maybe it speaks a lot to the lineup, but it also speaks a lot to these short films. I'm going Shot Player and A Crab in the Pool. Shot Player is a documentary. I thought it was a narrative. It is following this guy who pickpockets people, and that's how he makes a living. And the way that it's shot in this beautiful film on the streets of New York, in the subways of New York. And usually if you're filming a documentary like that, you would think, no, you got a narrative going on. No, they're just freestyling it, following him as he's telling stories about how when he would go on a date, he'd be like, wait 1 second, go around Times Square, pickpocket all the money he needs, go on that date. It's a very interesting short, and I would highly recommend it. Put it on your radar. But A Crab in the Pool is this insane animation of these siblings who are in the present, but at the same time blending with their past selves after a loss. And the way that it's told is literally what animation is meant for these weird visuals where a kid is looking at a woman who is eating her food and all of a sudden she's sipping him. And at the end of the story, you realize why he's looking at her that way, why the girl is acting the way she's acting. Bro, it hit like crazy. It is a beautiful, beautiful short film. This is when I'm riding all the way to any animated awards at the end. Shot Player and A Crab in the Pool, two fantastic short films to catch from South by Southwest.
Very cool, yeah. There's always a lot of really interesting short films at these festivals that don't end up getting the same love and attention that the features do, but you find some really excellent stuff. I don't have any shorts on my list, but if I were to put one, I'd put Trapped, which was, I believe, the jury winner for the short films. A really, really excellent one that takes place at a like elite boarding school as the porter comes in to clean up overnight. And I think it was like very smart and suspenseful, but it's dramatic and a bit funny. And, you know, it's a really
it's also
great,
complete, right? Beginning, middle, end. It's like, yeah, this suffices better than some features.
Shoot. Exactly, right? And you sometimes get these like really revelatory short films, and it's like, wow, I now love this filmmaker, and they haven't even made a feature yet. So,
right? I don't need 2 hours for emotion. You got
exactly.
me in 10.
Yeah, I mean, one of the films that we caught, or at least that Arturo caught at South By this year, I don't know if it's coming up on your list, is Omniloop. And mm-hmm. we first found out about that director, Bernard Brito, from, I think, his short film, Hudson Geese, which is really excellent, right?
Yeah, so, it's better than his future. Yeah. but Nine Night Waipo was also here, yeah. and that made it all the way to the Oscars. Should have won, but that was a stat category. It was a very stacked category, but I'm rooting for these shorts here. And I got some other links that I'm going to send you guys for my full top 10 that we still have there. So good Definitely. Shorts this year.
Yeah, so shout out to some of the shorts. Amanda, let's go back to you for your number 6.
For my number 6, I think I'm going to go with Greatest Hits. Cool. We'll pop that there. So we do have a full video out on that, so we don't need to talk about it here. But I just thought it was really cute and really nice. I like the performances. I thought it had an interesting concept that, you know, we all mentioned, you know, might have been able to explore the concept a little bit more on the sci-fi side of things. But I thought it was still like a really nice, unique little movie.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a really interesting romantic drama of sorts that incorporates time travel. I think we all had a good time with it. The Greatest Hits, Amanda's number 6. My number 6, I'm going to go with a film that first debuted in Toronto. I don't know if either of you have this up higher on your list, but I have Sing Sing over here.
I have it higher for sure.
All right, cool. So we can get back to it later. Art, you already told us your number 5 was Secret Mall Apartment.
That's so, two for a documentary, y'all. Add that to your list.
Amanda, what do you have at number 5?
So my number 5, I think I'm going to go with The Idea of You.
Hey, that one just missed my list.
There you go. So we did talk about that one extensively as well, but I just thought this was like the best way to approach that like fan fiction based on a real person turned movie scenario. Great performances out of Anne Hathaway and Nick Galitzine, where he plays the heartthrob in a boy band. And she is the 40-year-old who kind of unintentionally comes in his path and the relationship that builds out of it. So had a lot of fun with that one. I'm going to leave it at number 5.
Amanda, you might be more qualified to answer this question than I am. Is this the best movie adaptation yet from a piece of fan fiction?
Yeah, I gotta say, for something, yeah, I'm sure there's...
Shawshank.
I'm sure, like, adaptation for something that's fan fiction, something that started yeah. and very specifically started as fan fiction based on, like, a real person for sure. Mm-hmm. Because this did, I'm pretty sure, start as like the Harry Styles fan fiction.
Yeah.
You know, she's saying, I'm trying to address like the weird tropes of like, and just the inconsistencies in an older woman and a younger man versus an older man and a younger woman. You can say all that. It was Harry Styles fan fiction. That's
why why do we got more Harry Styles fan fiction adaptations that we're getting Shakespeare nowadays? Like, I'm a little confused as to how this is becoming.
That's what's in, you know?
Juggernaut.
That's what's in. It's a juggernaut. Yeah. But I do think this is the best one because the movie itself is actually good. It has really good comedy, amazing chemistry. I feel like if you're one of the people who watch those because you are looking for it to be more on the salacious side of things, that it won't necessarily deliver there. There are literal scenes where I was like, oh my God, they're literally doing mommy, you know, just like the position they put them in and stuff. So I was like, yeah. You know, it's good though. It will deliver in a lot of ways. It's definitely the streamer safe version of these movies. But yeah, no, I think it is, to me, I think it's easily the best.
It was a lot better than it needed to be. I'll say that.
Way better than it needed to be.
This is the closing, and it ended up being a great closer.
Yeah.
A really good time, sexy, soapy, and just like enjoyable.
Yeah.
And I guess Wattpad is the new Shakespeare, right?
There you go.
All right. So Amanda's number six is The Idea of You. Was that? Oh, no, it was five, right?
That was my five.
All right, so my number five, I'm going to go with Grand Theft Hamlet. Does anybody else have this on their lists?
Honorable for me. I almost made it
there. I kind of forgot that. Yeah, no, that was really fun.
yeah, this is a really interesting documentary about two unemployed friends who are playing Grand Theft Auto online together when they have the idea of staging a production of Hamlet within the world of Grand Theft Auto.
It's funny.
It's a really funny film, a really interesting sort of like examination of like the power of community and of art, and without like being very pretentious about it. I think there's a lot of just really silly moments where they'll be trying their best to put together this production, but hold on, we gotta go kill that guy real quick because he's coming at us with a helicopter. And just the way that they will often undercut the seriousness of their endeavor with the ridiculousness of the Grand Theft Auto online world is really, really great. But it also just does, I think, a better job than some other films that we've seen recently at getting across the idea of community that you can build through the internet and through online games and the ways in which that can be sort of this like immensely powerful resource for people. This is a film that takes place amidst COVID lockdown, so people are isolated and alone, and just seeing the way that they're able to express themselves and find like a bit of the world that they no longer have access to through this really ridiculous endeavor, I thought was quite delightful. And, you know, to me, it's one of the best films I've seen at sort of interpreting the online world in terms of real world feelings and situations and ideas. So Grand Theft Hamlet,
gamers
really
aren't
enjoyable.
Always wrong.
Yeah. Exactly.
There was another one this year as well, because it kind of has a little Eveline because they're living in there.
A little bit.
And then another one you had mentioned was a little like Eveline from Sundance, a movie we covered about a guy who lived all of his life, or a kid who lived all of his life online gaming. This one's online, whereas We Can Be Heroes. I remember you dropping Eveline for that one because they're LARP players. I thought that one was also a really good recommendation to have there. Do you remember We Met in Virtual Reality from Sundance?
Yeah.
That is like the great double feature to have with this one, because just the way they live in the world is, like you were saying, when they're trying to go meet people and they're going to get killed. Like, I feel like it's no different than if you were to go up to random people on the street here saying you want to do Hamlet with me back in my whatever.
Right.
And it's just fascinating to see a whole life within this world. And we're just going to get more of them. It feels weird that the novelty is it's all filmed in Grand Theft Auto, because I think in due time, as like saying it was shot in color. We're like right on the precipice of it not being a novelty. But luckily, it's fresh and it's new, and it's showcasing, it's pioneering. Yo, you could tell a whole story without ever showing a human.
Exactly. These are the movies that are doing the innovation. What was the one that you just mentioned? We Live in
Virtual Reality. That's a very
We Met in Virtual. Those are probably the pioneers of the sim upcoming genre of film. So we're definitely worth checking out. Yeah. My number five, Grand Theft Hamlet. We're back to your number four.
Hey, they
got to
time that for a six, bro.
They can, right?
They have to hold on to it until we get another trailer for six or something. They can't just leave that on the wayside. but yes, you're going back to my number four, which was actually one you had already mentioned. Sing Sing. So I don't know if it's higher for Amanda's, but...
No.
All right, let's talk about the one that we missed at TIFF. It had won some audience stuff. It won the festival, like Buzz Award thing, which was the only reason we were able to catch it right at the end. And damn me, was this the one that I did not want to miss again. Mm-hmm. It has a date slated for the summer, and it has been really getting hyped for what they're pitching as like the Oscar running performance for Coleman Domingo. Got a nomination this year. Decent role. I wouldn't have put it in my top five, but I think this one's clearing for sure. Just personally speaking, I don't even care about the awards, you know, little packaging that they might be doing for this. We have a whole review for it, so I don't want to get too into it, but I thought we had a really good discussion. This resonated with me because it's a movie that we've seen before in stuff like Bull, Mustang. Inmates who are using different forms of art or taking care of animals to be able to get out of you know, the state of mind that they're in when they're incarcerated in there.
Yeah.
Treating
the people who are treated the least humanely in our society with humanity, right? And allowing them that access to vulnerability and emotionality.
That acting isn't lying. It's being able to find a way to be in tune with your emotions. And this is one of those movies where a lot of the sequences may end with them fighting. And they don't. This is a movie that chooses to showcase what words you can say to de-escalate that. And I thought it was freaking beautiful. We're going to be talking more about it. We already talked more about it. All I need to say, it's in my number four. I'm glad you made it to your top 10 as well. I can't wait for that highlight reel of Coleman Domingo. And even just a lot of the supporting cast that were people who were in this program and now are in a motion picture. That is so profound because it's showing the project of doing that while you were imprisoned come full circle once you're out of it, and that it does work. And even bigger than that, what a flex to have been doing those plays and now you're acting alongside Coleman Domingo and holding your own. He sometimes got the spotlight stolen from him. There's that one guy who talks about what being in these plays are and that it's a reality for him. There's the person who it's based off of, who is Coleman Domingo's character, coming in and just stealing the show with this monologue. Beautiful stuff. Sing Sing, my top five.
Yeah, we have a fuller video where we talk about our thoughts on this movie, and think it's going to be a movie that's going to continue to be in the conversation all year long as we start to get into the Oscars discussion, stuff like that. It's not, I think, like my favorite movie I saw here or anything like that, but it's certainly one of the most special movies we saw here.
I'm surprised it's not the most special movie. Like you're saying.
Sing Sing. Hopefully people will get a chance to see that not too long from now. I think it's coming out in June or July from A24.
It's going to have a good rollout, I think.
Art's number four. Amanda, what is your number four?
I think I'm going to go with Things Will Be Different.
Hey, I got this one at number two.
Oh, nice. Okay, we can talk about it more, but this was another really fun sci-fi movie produced by Benson and Moorhead, directed and written by one of their early PAs on one of their first movies. So it has that very similar feel of this is our world, but there's these weird things that happen that you can just kind of accept as like a thing that happened, almost like the Black Mirror feel. But very good, very interesting concept of people committing a crime and then having to kind of time travel to avoid getting caught to this weird place. And the weird things. Very cool mashup of genres. While at its heart, kind of just being like a little bit of a family drama of, you know, what's happened to these siblings and why was this kind of like the final straw. And I thought it was really good. So we'll talk about it a little bit more later when we hit Zach for number two.
So Amanda's number four is Things Will Be Different. My number four, I suspect, is also higher on your list, so we can save it. I Love You Forever. So let's go back to Arturo for his number three.
Ditto, I Love You Forever.
Okay.
All right, that's my three, so I guess we can just get it out of the way.
Let's talk about it right now.
Let's go. This was a standout for me. I really love this movie. It's kind of in a match for the top three that I have because I have a blockbuster, a doc, and then this beautiful independent movie, which as independent as it could be when you're the daughter of Larry David. But hey, all that to the side. She kind of plays into that. Cassie David, and I'm blanking on the co-director as well because I know she co-directed this with a longtime friend of hers, Elisa Kalani. Thank you. She stars in the movie as well, so she's doing co-directing duties, but she's just a side character. The real star here is someone who I've been following since her days in Single Drunk Female, and she killed it here. Sophia was not at the screening, but she stole our hearts in this movie. She is just a friend who's trying to find somebody else, trying to move along and not be in this like rut of a relationship. And the guy who she finds is none other than Jack Nicholson's son, Mr. Junior Nicholson Jr. over here, who's been doing a lot of projects. And I think this may be one of his best roles. We saw him in Gonzo Girl, and he was a little crazy. But yeah. what he does here is he's mixing the charm that his dad has and then the craziness that his dad also has. And where he gets balanced there, I mean, that's up to you. But when she enters this relationship, it's all nice and dandy until cracks start showing. And when we were recording the reviews, when I finally realized, I was like, rom-com gone wrong. That's exactly what this is. And I think it covers it beautifully. Mm-hmm. We had described it as like a visual glossary for all of these terms, all these buzzwords that you've heard, from gaslighting to, you know,
love bombing,
trauma dumping, all these different things. Instead of talking about it, it showcases it to you, and you're watching this going, this is a really awkward movie, or is it because it's hitting like really close to things you may have seen, things you may have felt? I think it's a profound movie. I think it's awkward in the ways that it needs to be, and then it's just freaking hilarious at times. We have a whole review for it. I'm so glad it's in all of our collective top fives, because it is a banger of a movie.
It's really good. It's kind of hard to capture the way things feel sometimes when you're in those more emotionally abusive relationships, to the point that you do actually think you're a problem, but you still want to scream at something's happening. Like, you see the name pop up on the phone and you just want to throw the phone, or like you get on the phone with them and they're not in a bad mood, but you're so primed for something to be wrong.
You're just waiting for it.
So you're trying to get off the phone, and then you literally just scream when the phone conversation is done, when you're just kind of like, yeah, no, it's so good. I'll talk to you in a bit. And you just, it hit a little bit.
It got that down.
Then it was still funny.
Magic on screen.
Because it's kind of taking you on a nice journey where it's like, this is really hard, but then we're going to make you laugh, so you're not just sitting there being like, oh my God. It was very good, very good.
Some of the best tonal shifts in this film.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something that we mentioned in our review, is the way that this movie is able to maintain the comedy even through its most like fraught moments and undercut the like dramatic tension and the sadness by giving you just a really funny joke. That's ultimately, I think, the movie's best quality, is that it maintains a really strong sense of humor that I think will carry you through what are uncomfortable moments and maybe some bumpier moments. But yeah, I think it speaks to a unfortunately true element of modern dating, and it does it pretty effectively. So I Love You Forever. Armanda's number three, Arturo's number three, my number four. Definitely one of the best movies from this year's South by Southwest Film Festival.
Yeah, if you're not going to go to therapy, at least watch the TikToks I sent you.
At least watch this movie.
Yeah, at least watch this movie. Yeah.
My number three, we mentioned it already. It's Babes. I laughed a lot. Hopefully you will,
too. You
got a
favorite joke you've been coming to?
Oh, shoot. You're asking me after I've seen 25 other movies since then, so a lot of it is slipping my mind. But I did really love her freak out in the gynecologist's office with the needle. Just as somebody who also doesn't love needles.
Yeah. I think mine's also in the office, too. It's genetics are racist, or what was it?
Yeah.
Just finding funny ways to showcase things people need to know about, and not making it sound like a lesson, not making it sound like a pamphlet. Making a joke out of it is always the best way to tell people, hey, get checked for this stuff. Don't have the stigma about it. Really funny bit. Good stuff.
Definitely. So let's go back to Art for his number two movie of South by Southwest.
Some really good documentaries. And the moment I saw this one, it was one I was really anticipating, and it delivered for me in every way, shape, or form that you want a sports documentary to do. Clemente. Ooh. It is the story of Roberto Clemente, and really just the beginnings of how he got inspired to be in baseball and trained by his grandma throwing la chancla. Like, that stuff was funny to me. It then mixes in the animations for stuff that, you know, they may not have footage for. I'm like, this is beautiful. It's, they're drawing his childhood and what it came to be. You want some talking heads? They got talking heads. They got sports analysts in there. They got his family in there. They got celebrities. I don't care for the celebrities, but they got them in there too. They would just put like hats, Pirates hats on people to be like, hi, I'm a fan. They even got haters, bro. Bob Costas is in this doc hating because he was a Yankees fan. I loved how well-rounded it was. I like the smack they talked on him. I like the different perspectives of, like, he had Munchausen syndrome. He wasn't really always sick. No, he was sick. Nah, he was completely fine. The back and forth that they had on this man to make him a full-fledged person. And if you don't know anything about Roberto Clemente and what he had done, I think it's safe to say that he was like the Hispanic Jackie Robinson.
Yeah.
Because he was mixed in Latino and Black, he kind of had like this almost middle way that he went into the MLB, where he wasn't necessarily part of either avenue. And the movie describes that really well in his own words through archives, but then also through his kids recounting, like, this is what our dad felt. He was kind of in the middle of all this. But then he also has a demise. I don't know if you know, Amanda, about what ends up happening to Roberto. But let's say planes have been an issue for a while. I'll put it to you that way. And it was in doing humanitarian work that's why he had passed. But I think it's a profound documentary, not just on his baseball career and his family, but you get into insights on like how he approached life. And to me, that's what makes it one of the best documentaries. It delivered on every aspect that I wanted to. Clemente, I'm excited to see how this one rolls out.
There's lots of, you know, like interesting famous icons out there who deserve a documentary. And then a lot of times you get the documentary and it's like, that really didn't capture all the things that made that person special. You don't have that issue with Clemente. I think it does really good job at effectively communicating not just why they're an icon, but also who they were beyond their achievements, like with the quality of the person and the way that the people in their lives felt about them. So it's a really, really effective documentary in that sense. And yeah, if you were a fan of baseball and interested in baseball history, like it's an unmissable documentary for sure.
It really puts you in what he was going through. I really like the one where he's admitted that he spoke perfect English, but he spoke with a broken accent because then people were honest around him because they thought he doesn't understand. And he goes, I talked less so I can listen more and see who people really were.
He's that guy.
That really stuck with me. So yeah, Clemente.
Hell yeah.
Nice. So Arturo's number two is Clemente. Let's go to Amanda for her number two.
I'm going to go with, I assume this is probably Art's one then. Civil War is my number two.
Talk about it. Let's go.
Let's go. Are we going to dive into it now?
Let's dive into it now.
I even got the stickers that came out over here because they went all out with these cool toy soldiers stickers.
I think they're going to make the toy soldiers. I think they're going to make the actual, they were using them in marketing images yesterday.
The poster thing where they move?
Yeah, I think that. It's A24. So. Of course they're going. Any chance
I need my
for,
Wagner one.
They're going to make one, you know? So we have a full review on this one too, but
yes.
Civil War is very interesting in that going into it, I think a lot of people are expecting it to be something that it might not end up being or polarizing. I feel like it is okay to have the complaint that this is a little bit of an apolitical movie. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't want you to be able to grab a foothold on what's happening other than the fact that like you kind of ended up with a dictatorial president who is like held office for the third term. And what that would look like in America and who might team up to like overthrow that. But again, they're really not even focused on that. It's like drive-by lines of like, you know, he stayed for a third term. He's disbanded the FBI, a bunch of other random stuff that he's done. And other than that, they don't really address left or right politics at all. This isn't supposed to be. I want to say that one of the recent things commented on it being like a futuristic. They call her, they say she's a futuristic war photographer about Kaylee Spaney. So like, if that's how they're describing it, I don't know how far in the future they're planning on going. Cause like one of the cameras they're using is like the same camera I have right now. So I don't, you know,
it was a nostalgic take.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. But they had the nostalgia camera and then they had the one that I assume was supposed to be the modern one.
Yeah.
And all they're doing is taping off the Sony logo on it. But so it does feel very current. Like there's nothing about the movie that necessarily would lead me to believe that it is in the future. Almost like kind
Zach
of how
brought up like parallel.
Parallel. That's yeah, exactly. Like a parallel reality, present. A parallel present. But it is very interesting in terms of just being a movie about like documenting war and like what that would what a civil war would look like in modern day America and whether or not you would ever want that to come to your doors. Because I think some people think they're really horny for that and they think it's going to go so well for them. And it's like, I don't know, champ. I don't think it's going to go how you think.
Backyard.
You don't want that in your backyard. No one wants that in their backyard. You don't even want to have to engage with it on the internet half the time. You don't want it in your backyard. So from that standpoint, it's interesting how ethics and morals can be shifted in terms of like what you want to do for your job or and the ethics behind it. Kind of a little bit of like some Nightcrawler vibes of like when is it okay to do something and film something and when is it not? When is it documenting and when is it just trying to get yourself somewhere, break down yourself as a human being. So really interesting, great performances. This is one of those roles, like, I didn't know that Kirsten Dunst had a dinner for this, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know,
I thought she was a standout.
She is fantastic in this movie. And it's just great to see how people shift through the entire movie from start to finish and, you know, where it leaves off. There are moments that do feel very... Oddly enough, when I feel like when it's ramping up the most at the end is when it felt the most like The Purge to me. And that's supposed to be like the more serious, like we're getting to it, gritty moments of it. But it's hard not for any, it's kind of hard for anything to not feel like The Purge if it's like mass scale violence in America, and in American city streets. So yeah, I think it is interesting. I think it is going to end up being a polarizing movie for how not polarizing it wants its politics to be.
But that's you arguing with yourself.
But this that's you arguing with yourself,
technical feat. This is a movie that's got incredible performances, a movie that takes what it would feel like if they turned the United States of America into a battleground.
Yeah.
The sound design on this was spectacular. Ooh. The whole movie, Devesh is asking if it should be in IMAX.
Watching in IMAX.
That's where she saw it at one of the best ones, where she saw Dune as well.
Yeah.
And again,
I plugged my ears for some of it. I was like, it's so loud. It's so loud.
Because they like throw you in the trenches of what's happening.
It feels like it feels like someone else is with them recording them going through it.
The long takes. It is relentless. I don't know. I didn't know he had it in him some of these takes over here. Because he's been doing a lot of action or maybe relying on CGI. This felt like he got the military.
It did.
To just like do their thing. Hey, how would you attack DC? And then just shot it as fast as he could.
Yeah.
He talked about having these new cameras that he was able to use. He's like, it sounded like he was describing the stuff from Ambulance. Ambulance. Because they had the drones going.
Because they were the DJIs,
He did a lot of drone stuff in that movie. And he's like, I did it first. I was like, cool. Let me wait a little bit. My man did it best.
That's
why I loved seeing that tech now go to somebody who made it feel visceral. You were talking about the performances. Kristen Dunst. The Kaylee Spaney. Thank you. Yeah. The way they play off of each other, as one being the older reporter, one being the younger one. Wagner just being like funny in the exact moment so that when he starts getting flustered, you're flustered. And then Stephen McKinley.
Yeah,
Stephen McKinley Henderson.
Yeah. Standout. Just a beautiful movie all around. I had some gripes like I had mentioned in the main review, but I think out of all the movies here, this was the best theater experience. This was like the one that drew me in the most. I thought it was a technical feat through and through. For that alone, I know it's going to be polarizing for a lot of people, but I think we're adding to the discussion, which is also the point of the movie.
Yeah.
That you cannot deny this is an impeccably made movie.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out Jesse Plemons. You're so scary, bro. You're so good in everything.
We somehow did not mention him in our review, and he's so frightening in this movie.
He's so good with his like pink glasses. And I'm like, shit, dude.
This is a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
You both mentioned polarizing, and I think this is a movie that kind of is not done right by the way that we talk about movies, because we so much of the dialogue around movies is, was this good, was this bad? And I think this is a movie where, like, if you're going into it for a take on the polarization of America driving us apart and causing a civil war, like, it's not effective. It's not at that. But if you're going into it for a movie that is transposing the idea of a country in conflict that we're so familiar from seeing it in the news across the world, but not in our own backyards, I think it's extremely effective and extremely good at that. So, yeah, like I think there are going to be a lot of people who come into this movie wanting it to be something that it's not. And I think it's also perfectly legitimate to ask that a movie that is called Civil War, that is released during an election year, perhaps takes like some harder stances on some issues. But I think if you're focused on that, you're ignoring the things that the movie is doing frighteningly well.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of it there. It is an intensely interesting movie to discuss. Like, we, without even really thinking about it, went for over half an hour in our spoiler-free review, and would probably go twice as long if we open ourselves up to spoilers, which we still might do on the channel. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the movies of the year, for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mad Max Fury Road for press.
For press, yeah.
There we go. Yeah. All right, so Amanda's number two, Arturo's number one, my number nine, Civil War, the latest from Alex Garland. Go check out our full review on that one. I think we are at my number two, which Amanda already mentioned and mentioned most of what I wanted to say about it, but it's things will be different from writer-director Michael Felker. Just a really interesting kind of bottle sci-fi film. I love how kind of contained it feels while also feeling endless and expansive in terms of the ideas that it's pursuing. And it's a movie that is very surprising. I think you don't really know what's going to come around the next corner, but it plays these relationship dynamics out into the most interesting places they can go. And I just sort of dug it. I dug its kind of like its low-key gritty vibe. And it's really the style of sci-fi that I most like. I'm sure people will compare it to the Benson and Moorhead movies since they are producers on it. And obviously it feels very much in dialogue with those movies in more ways than one. But I had a very good time with it. And shout out to Michael Felker because he was online with us for 3 hours to get into Civil War. Yeah. So that man is committed to watching
and
movies.
And didn't get in.
Don't think he got in?
He said he didn't get in.
He didn't get into Fall Guy.
He didn't get into Fall Guy.
The Sing Sing director didn't get in.
Oh, right. Okay.
A lot of directors were in line. Shout out those directors. We appreciate y'all. That shows that you are as big movie fans.
Exactly.
I respect that. We noticed that.
Yeah, me too. Respect that stuff.
All right. So that's my number two. Before we get to our number ones, although we already know Art's, do we want to throw out some honorable mentions? Art, do you have any?
Diane Warren. I have some interesting documentaries that we're also playing there. I had mentioned We Can Be Heroes, which had won an award as well. You would think it's the geekiest, nerdiest thing, and it's twice that. And that's why it's so beautiful, seeing these kids who really just let go into this LARPing universe and just the way that they break it down between being full screen to widescreen when they're in that mode. I thought it was pretty neat. The Black Keys film, I knew nothing about them.
Yeah.
I feel like I still don't know these two gentlemen, but I get their gist. And I like how they had this reoccurring bit at the South By like intro where it was just like, maybe we should go in and make catchy music. Maybe that'll be successful. Yeah. So funny. I know, right? Roleplay was another one that was fascinating because it's a college campus taking all of the stuff that's happening around the college campus and turning it into a play so that they could showcase it through art. Very uncomfortably urgent on that one. The Jackie Shane story was a good documentary on this artist where they had barely any footage of her. So the way that they reenacted is almost making like a virtual reality thing of her performing. Almost like you remember in The Dark Knight where they do the sonar thing? It's almost like they used the audio to sonar recreate the nightclubs that she was in. And with her being someone who transitioned, a lot of her family and a lot of the history books, they just kept her hush-hush. Mm. So it really is uncovering her story and the role that she played. Cheech and Chong's last movie, goofy stuff there. And I think that's it for my top ones. A lot of the other stuff I'll be mentioning later. Smugglers, I thought was a pretty funny movie that played at TIFF that kind of has the smugglers out at sea come back for a second heist, but this time it's a heist within a heist within a heist, which I thought was pretty interesting. And Audrey, I think you guys saw it. I don't know if we all thought it was as funny, but this is a dumb movie. This would be, I guess, the closest I got to a gutter this year in where a mother takes advantage of her daughter ending up in a coma and goes, finally, I could be young again and take your acting auditions. It's so stupid.
It is. I think it starts a lot stronger than it gets.
It just gets really dumb.
Yeah, but it has moments for sure.
Those are some of the ones that I had.
Nice. Amanda, any honorables?
I'm going to be weird. My honorables, because I did end up watching them again at the festival, are movies that I already had seen and liked a lot back at Sundance. So it's What's Inside, which I knew I had to see again, both just to fact check a couple things that we found out the boy was tight as hell with. And just because it's never playing in a theater again. And I really wanted to see it with a big crowd, a self-by crowd. And it was so worth it. I loved it. I think I liked it even more that second time. Love this movie so much.
I think I was
going to
stay till the end, and I did. I almost risked the Sing Sing seats. I was like, I won't see his Q&A, but I got to see that ending.
It's so, so good. I'm just so excited it exists. I was so excited to see it again with a crowd. This isn't an honorable mention. If this was a first watch, this would be in this area. Like, I have my list. My list isn't written out 1 through 10. It's written out 1 through 12. And I, and I'm just, I'm going through these. Yeah. And then the other one is you go, Zach. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think there's three movies here that also played at Sundance. Those being It's What's Inside, Dee Dee, and what you're about to mention, I Saw the TV Glow. I kind of feel like if they were debuted at South By, those would be my top three of this festival.
They'd be up. Yeah. They'd be in here. They'd be in here for sure.
You have any different reactions with the people around you? Because I had the lady for the Netflix one.
it's what's inside.
Yeah.
Going didn't crazy. Like the editing.
Yeah, I had a person in front of me who was getting a little tired at one point. I could tell she was like, this is dumb. And I'm like, no, this is the movie. And if it's not for you, you're too old. Sorry, get out here.
It was
I
like
don't
Uncut
even
Gems
mean
for them
anyway.
Because they had talking above talking about yeah, talking.
No, but it's
I was
so
like, this
funny.
Is actually a little hectic.
It's so good. Like when it's all like, no, it was this person's party. And like the picture changes and like, yeah. yeah.
We were sitting next to, we're sitting near Sam, one of the inner cuties who we spoke to a few times during the festival. So occasionally I just heard him cackling with joy. So I knew we came through on our recommendations.
We didn't stray him
so
wrong.
So good. And just like already knowing what's happening and waiting for the audience to realize what's going to happen is so fun. It's so good. Yeah. It is actually depressing that this movie is not getting a theatrical run. Like Netflix, please, for the love of God. Do something, please,
do
even
right
if it's
thing.
Limited. It's so fucking good. And then the other one is I Saw the TV Glow, which was one we were really excited to catch at Sundance because it was getting such glowing reviews. And it's that one that we just couldn't stop thinking about. Like Art managed to catch it a second time at the festival. I caught it a second time here. And it just really reaffirms how like strong this movie up. It has just been bumping up levels every time as this like absolutely guttural and gutting movie about like, you know, what happens when you don't accept who you are as a person, your identity, what happens when you try to beat that, bury that piece of yourself and how it feels. It literally leads to a life that is both too fast and too long that you feel like you're dying for every second of it. And then you blink and you're like 50. And it's just so good while also just kind of being like a hopeful look at like you can just be yourself and live that authentic life. And I feel like it's applicable to a lot of people, but obviously it is like really narrowing in on that queer identity. And then even on top of that, even more like the trans identity for the main character, at least. It is so good. So good. So impressive. Very weird. It's definitely not going to be for everyone in terms of like how it's filmed and made, but like give it a chance because it is very good. I will say, actually, the viewing experience for this one at South By was worse because I don't know if everybody in the audience quite knew how to take it, what to expect from certain things. There were scenes, there was definitely people laughing at moments. I'm like, this, and like, you have half the people crying, half people laughing because they just thought it was played for a bit. And it's like, no, this is like a guttural.
Not reading the room.
This is this person realizing that their life is fucking over kind of type thing, you know? Just like, not over, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just, oof.
It's a moment where I feel like the South By crowds are often inclined to have fun. And it's a
party,
movie that.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's a movie that's a little bit more haunting and
it's
existentially terrifying for something to play in the big Paramount Theater.
Yeah,
which
so
is another thing, like, you're mentioning everything that's important about the movie, all the themes and aspects. It's a well-made
movie.
Yeah.
It's so
the
well-made.
The mixing, the music,
the
way it's
so
shot,
good.
Like, it needs to be respected for that sense.
Yeah.
It don't matter if you don't connect with it like that. It's a well-crafted piece.
Very well. Yeah, the first song in the movie being a cover of the Broken Social
you,
Scene
the
song.
Were,
like, come
and
on.
The things you were picking up with it. I love the ratios in my second
the
viewing when I started picking up on those.
Yeah.
I was like, you are just actually, like, crafting something very well made here that needs to be studied, needs to be observed, and just, you know, with the themes and what it's exploring on the other end of it end up being just a really profound piece of media. We've been calling it Lynchian to many degrees, and I think that'll hold up because she enters that psyche, and I think it's going to be a really big hit once it comes out in May. Also, another one that's
right around not too far off.
Yeah, and planning for that should be theatrical, so hopefully that's a wide theatrical. We'll see what happens. They've been doing Love Lies Bleeding really well. That got way further than I anticipated it getting. I get that Kristen Stewart's in it.
Big year for A24
to a different level, but like A24, they're putting their back into it. So very good movie. I don't know why I worded it like that, but very good movie. I don't know why it
comes
came
inside
out.
Back into it. We just missing Zach on one.
We're just minds in the gutter right
minds
now.
Minds in the
I
gutter right now. But yeah, also just like how it engaged with like nostalgia and stuff. It's very, very interesting.
Ooh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's good. Great stuff.
We mentioned a lot of my honorable mentions already. I had Idea of You. I had Greatest Hits. I had Bob Trevino Likes It. My Dead Friend Zoe. Desert.
You ever catch Gasoline Rainbow?
No, I need to ask them to update that link because it expired just a little sooner than I was ready
speaking
for.
Speaking of movie,
I really wanted to
movie
catch
one.
That movie. Speaking of ones that we missed, one that we haven't mentioned that did make my honorable mentions. I really wanted to sneak this one in the top 10, but I ended up not doing it.
Roadhouse.
A Nice Indian Boy, the film from Roshan Sethi starring Karan Soni about an Indian man bringing his new fiance home to meet his parents. And while I think there's some elements of the romantic comedy side of this film that felt a little rushed. The side of the story that's sort of about like him coming to a new understanding with his parents and them learning to love each other for who they really are, I thought was really effective and really beautifully done. So I would strongly recommend that one, particularly if you're a fan of Karan Soni, because I think something about his collaborations with Roshan Sethi, I mean, they're real-life partners. Obviously, they get each other, and I think Roshan gets the best out of Karan as an actor in their films together. So a nice Indian boy, one to keep on your radar. But our number one films of South by Southwest, we all picked different movies, and we all picked different action blockbusters of sorts. Art, you already told us about your thoughts on Civil War. Amanda, tell us more about The Fall Guy. I mean, we already reviewed it on the channel, but
you know,
it is
your
favorite film of the festival.
It is. I went into this, I feel like I had seen the trailer and thought it looked good and then totally forgot what the trailer was. So then when I'm like, is this just going to be like a Gray Man? Is this going to be another like this should just be straight to Netflix action movie that it feels like somebody like wrote in a bubble with a brief concept and just, you know, let it ride like that. No, this is a really good movie. I didn't know it was by the guy who did Bullet Train. I know people don't like Bullet Train. It doesn't feel like Bullet Train, but it does have some of that same urgency to the action, just the fluid. I love Bullet Train. So, and this feels like the more, like my parents hated Bullet Train. They'll like The Fall Guy. Like this is a very good movie. It is very funny. The action is really tight. You can tell that they love the stunt work they're putting into this because the whole thing is that, you know, Ryan Gosling is like a stuntman for an actor who kind of gets pulled into this weird situation when the actor that he was stunting for goes missing. And it's just a very, and then there's like a rom-com at the center of this where he is into the director of this particular movie and played by Emily Blunt fantastically. So it is
beautifully.
Yeah, very. And it's, yeah, beautiful for her. Yeah, just so good. So good that they actually broke a stunt record with the most roles a car has done. They did a stunt show when they introduced it. Just, and you can tell that Ryan has a lot of love and appreciation for, I don't know how you can make this movie and not have a love and appreciation for stunt workers, but you can see it in the movie that this is a movie that loves movies, but then it is still just a very good movie. So like solid action,
solid
comedy, just really fun all around. I don't know. I love it. I love the actors in this already. So that alone makes it a little bit more primed to be good, but like, it's everything it needs to be. Like Ryan Gosling's very good at being the leading man who's willing to let himself take the punches, to be the butt of the joke in a lot of areas, to make the joke out of himself, which I always appreciate. There are too many comedy action stars that are not willing to let them get into that position.
I don't want to fall victim to recency bias, especially when there's a Ken performance that everybody loved very recently. But is this like your favorite version of Ryan Gosling in a movie?
I don't know. I love a lot of Ryan Gosling because like
he's a very great actor.
I love La La Land. Like it's hard to beat something like that where he's just passionate about something. But then this depressed little boy.
Drive.
He's like good. The guy is a very versatile actor, but he does fit very well in the kind of like I'm gonna make fun of myself a little bit comedies and be cool
nice
with
guys.
It. Nice guys. That he's less pathetic in this than in Nice Guys, but like he's really good at those roles. He's really good at being and it works for him and it doesn't diminish him in the ways I think some other action stars thinks it diminishes you if you let yourself be the butt of the joke too many times. He's great. This is fantastic. It's super fun because he's both goofy but then incredibly fucking charming and obviously handsome because he's Ryan Gosling. But it's very very good. Very good. Very good movie.
The posters you snatched up too. Thank you for them.
No
Probably
worries.
The best
they
posters
me,
we got.
I know they Some hand me one, and I was like, "Yo, my friends could not make it into this movie," and he just grabs a stack and hands them to me, and I'm like, "Let's go."
Alina's got one poster up, or two. It's that picture from The Omen that they took for us. That, like for whatever reason, I'm not even in it. I like disappeared, and then this poster. Like it's
good. It's like
it's
cardboard. Like it is a print. Mm-hmm. It's proper art print that you could go. Yeah. I'm gonna get mine's gonna be framed because it's that nice, you know.
I also think it's the best pull up. That any movie had for the premiere.
They
pulled
stunts.
Up in a freaking monster truck.
They put
rolled
after
out.
after they had already done dirt bike stunts where a dude flipped over a dirt bike.
Like what?
Like crazy.
Yeah, but that's good. I like that they went all out. And this is coming out
soon.
In May.
Yeah, May, April. I'm thrilled for it. It's April. It's always earlier than I think it is. Because they're already doing some pre-screenings in 4DX.
You were saying don't watch it, but I'm almost a little curious. I'm ready to break my one rule. It'd be worth it.
It hurt. Like, yeah. Dune hurt me. That's the only reason why I knew. Because I was like, why is this the only day that Dune's playing in the middle of the day and I can go see it? It's because they were doing a Fall Guy preview right after. May 3rd, apparently. May 3rd. Damn, okay. So you can have the you can watch the, you know, the idea of you one day at home, and then you go out. So it's like ones that's a little bit more that's for her, one too. That might be a little bit more for him, you know.
But the Fall Guy is good. Two duels of actors that are great. So good, we love the idea of you chemistry. Yeah, and you're so telling me that this is like what they did at the Oscars for a feature film.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. They're so good.
Hey, well, I'm excited.
It's fun.
Your number ones are my watch list, so I'm happy. I'm like the inner cutie going, yes, exactly. Excellent.
Yeah, so I was surprised by how much I like this one.
Fine. Yeah, the unfortunate situation of our struggles to get into every screening we want to do at South By meant that Arturo didn't just miss Amanda's number one movie, he also missed my number one movie, which is Monkey Man. this is the film that felt most like Pulp Fiction adrenaline needle straight into my chest, like just coursing through my veins. I wanted to like get up and break stuff more than I did after the movie that actually played break stuff. I really, really had a good time with this one. I looked up punching bags on Amazon after this movie.
I got a Cobra bag in my bathroom.
Yeah, there we go. Maybe that's what I'll go with. It's just like, it is not a perfect movie, and it is not, I don't know if this is necessarily like going into the action movie film canon. During our longer review on the channel, we talked about how particularly Amanda mentioned the lull in the middle. And while I don't think it took me out of the movie as much as it took Amanda out of the movie, like it definitely has that lull in the middle. But when it hits, it is just viscerally satisfying, badass, brutal brawler. It just electric in a way that I was hoping to get out of more movies that we saw here. And I think that's ultimately what you're asking for in a movie like this, is if it kind of makes you want to stand up and pump your fist, that it is satisfying. And it's also a chance to see an actor that I've loved for a while in Dev Patel just really, truly reinvent himself. This is a revelatory kind of performance from Dev Patel, one that I'm hoping will open up a whole bunch of new paths for him, because he's just... he's magnetic in this movie. I think there's a lot to really like about it. It's not a perfect movie, but it's the movie that I just had the most fun with out of everything that we saw at South by Southwest.
And you got some food. I heard you got some, what, naan?
Yeah, oh my God, the best. We got full Indian spread. So there was two parties for Monkey Man. Both of them had Indian food, different spreads for both. Great food. So good.
I got an awesome little video from it, too, at their photo booths. They had the photo booth of the Fall Guy, too. But I like the Monkey Man photo booth more.
Ever since he watched this, Zach would come out shirtless in black and red, and the door would have to open like this from the Airbnb room. And I'm like, Zach, dun-dun.
It's not time.
So good. So good.
They went to the activation and got those. It was cool. But when I think it was Caitlin's or Amanda's video that zoomed out and it was the bully guy, I'm like, I'm sorry, but that's even cooler, bro. It's manual.
Right. Yeah.
I'm excited for it. Even the dispatch that you posted up, that was the one picture that my sister commented on. She's like, whose man is this? Who is this boy? And I was like, that's Dev Patel, bro. Like,
it's Dev Patel, you know?
He's a handsome dude.
Really good, really good.
Nice.
Yeah.
So overall, I mean, it was a really fun South by Southwest. I know we sort of like winced a little about some of the movies not being like top tier, but there's still a lot of great stuff. Mm-hmm. A really good time was had by all.
Yeah.
And I think we saw a lot of stuff that people are going to really enjoy when they get the chance to see it as well.
It's true.
Hopefully you put something on your watch.
It's kind of weird to have to be begging for tickets, which we've never done. Usually we just make it through the system. I'm out here in the emails, and now there's people that couldn't accommodate me for shit being like, are you going to put it on Rotten Tomatoes?
Fascinating stuff.
I'm like, I don't know. Did you give me a ticket?
Can you get me a link? Maybe.
We're
learning new skills here at the Intercom Podcast. But
it was cool. It was fun. Yeah. That's the only reason why I got into Fall Guy, is because the guy who got me into Monkey Man Googled me apparently and was like, okay, here you go.
We're learning to work the pavement.
Yeah.
Get our names out there.
I hate being that way because there's expectations involved, but whatever. They'll get theirs. I got mine. They delivered at least. As long as they deliver.
Yeah. We'll play your game if you give us good stuff.
I don't mind.
Hat. And I got my Paramount vest. And I'm just walking in next year.
Yeah, hell yeah.
What they say
just
in Tenet,
commandeer one of those volunteer ships.
Yeah, and the safety vest, you can get anything, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you should take. You should wear your Denver Film Fest volunteer shirt and see if that's good enough.
To get right, they don't even know.
It says volunteer. Yeah. I had no idea.
Bro, half the time I'm in these lines, they come up to me, ask me where to go. I'm like, I don't. You actually that way.
Yeah.
That way, go over there.
Yeah,
go that's what I just started doing. I was like, over there, that way.
Yeah, I would say they were a little bit like the volunteers are always great. I would say they were a little bit more scattered this year compared to last year. Like last year, it was a machine. It was a machine. This year was more of like, no, you got to keep going with the line until it gets to the back. Yeah, you don't just stop where you are. You keep going. But
this year they got mad at me for not doing their job during one of the lines.
Zach got yelled at, I don't know how many times in a row at the Paramount for recording the stuff he's supposed to be recording as press.
Dude, they're like, no, recording.
They
like,
just
no,
don't like my face. We're supposed to record what it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had a great time. Any other final South by Southwest thoughts before we've still got our recap, which we'll probably do on Monday, where we can talk about more stuff. But
stragglers, all of our best pickups. I have like a whole box that's still in a Franklin's thing.
Swag stuff.
Footage.
Hell yeah!
Still a lot more content to come, but hopefully
got to talk more about the parties we got into.
Yeah, but you know, with this top 10 list, hopefully we gave y'all something in the honorable mentions that y'all can put on your watch list. Obviously, not everything's going to hit with y'all, but the idea is that you got three opinions coming at you, and hopefully the ones that made all of our top 10s, you know, those should be at the top of your list. Maybe something you should give a try. I believe all of them, for the most part, are expected to come out. There's still some that we're eyeing for pickups, like I Love You Forever. But again, keep tuned to the Intercut Podcast, and we'll be updating you on when those come out. Shoo, we still updating you on ones from last year. Would you mention the Rachel Sennett one?
Yeah,
I used to be funny,
which it's getting some screenings. Some places are screening it. I don't know what that means, but like it's getting some small screenings. Almost like a secondary festival run or something, but that's got to come out. That's kind of good.
Yeah, I actually saw one of my honorable mentions from last year's South by Late Bloomers just got picked up by Vertical.
Oh, cool.
So.
And Late Night with the Devil, just got canceled. Like, things just keep coming and going.
Yeah, coming and going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's about all for this edition of the Intercut Podcast. You can catch more from me by following me across social media at Zshevich. That's Z-S-H-E-V as in Violet Crown Theater, I-C-H. And check out my videos at Multiplex Show on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. Arturo, where can people find more from you?
You can find me over at LME Movies on all social media, from Twitter, Letterboxd, on YouTube, or every week here on the Intercut Podcast.
Amanda, where can people find more from you?
You can find me all over the place, but usually on YouTube at Amanda the Jedi.
And you can find more of the Intercut Podcast weekly here, either on our audio feed, which you subscribe to whatever podcatcher you use, whether that's Apple Podcast, whether that's Spotify, whether it's Overcast, which is what I use, or you can subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/intercutpod, where you can watch
I'm trying to not use that word, beleaguered.
Yeah, you know, I keep using that, and then I realize that's not even what I meant. Our sleep deprived faces. How about that? Because we all could use a nap right now.
Our burnt end faces.
I need a
our
nap.
Our burnt end, burnt out faces.
Burnt out. Burnt out and burnt ends.
Here on the Intercut Podcast every week. Find new episodes of Intercut Weekend Must Watch streaming on our YouTube channel every Monday. And please leave us a comment, like the videos. Consider heading over to iTunes to give us that much requested 5-star review. You know, we were the number 4 film review podcast in Nigeria recently. Ooh. So shout out to our Nigerian
fans. I told
you
we could do it.
Holding it down.
You were like, I don't know.
I was like, you know, it's a part of the region where I feel like they don't like it. I don't know. Thank you for supporting the pod. Continue listening. Continue subscribing and all those good things. Shout out to our patrons who are supporting the show for as little as $3 a month over on patreon.com/intercutpod, where you can get access to all sorts of behind the scenes info about the show, be made aware of things coming up, upcoming recordings, get access to videos before we make them public, as well as access to our monthly patron Google Hangouts, the next one of which we probably have to do pretty soon, maybe even on Monday. But yeah, keep it tuned. Patreon.com/intercutpod. You can even subscribe for free to get updates about the show. You can get updates about the show across social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We are at intercutpod, as well as on Discord, which you can find a link to in the description of this episode, to get updates throughout the week from Arturo, from Amanda, from me, from anyone that we feature here on this podcast. Thanks again for tuning in. And until next time, we're just trying to do the wrong things the right way.